we're all in this season of unlearning. And I think we're just unlearning the old way of doing social media, the old way of doing content marketing. But when you think like a creator, you're thinking, okay, how can we lead with value first? How can we be less promotional? How can we lead with storytelling? How can we lead with fostering a community? Let's even adopt some of these creator habits.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Funnel Vision, where we're speaking with leaders in digital marketing who are thinking big and leaving their mark on the industry. Consider this an opportunity to stop, reflect, and learn from the industry's best. I'm Paula Mejia.
And I'm Sasha Belenke.
Let's get started.
So today on the show, we have Brandon Smithrick, head of content at Kickstarter. Brandon, welcome to Funnel Vision.
Thank you.
Brandon has been recognized for his innovative work in marketing and advertising with career stops. I'm sure he'll tell us more at some very cool companies, including Songfinch, Squarespace, Ralph Lauren. And Brandon, you have like almost 38,000 followers on LinkedIn, which is a lot by LinkedIn standards.
Really a lot. Very cool.
We can also go there about that also. But thank you all so much for having me. Excited to talk, excited to dive into what I've learned in my career, but also as like a part-time creator, which is like a weird kind of mix of it all.
Yeah, actually, that whole creative angle is one of the things that's so exciting for us to discuss with you today, because you work at Kickstarter, whose audience are creators. So one of the things we really want to dive into with you is how working with and for creators has changed or developed your perspective on how to do creative marketing, content marketing in a way that works for your business.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think it's very different at Kickstarter versus other companies I've been at, because I like to think of the Kickstarter creators as the creators that get like passed over, not talking to as much. Mm-hmm. So when you hear brands talk to creators, there's this one subset of content creators. And then there's this other subset of people who are entrepreneurs or the builders or the doers. But the cool umbrella word now is just creators. At Kickstarter, there's everything from like comic book writers, and they don't really get spoken to that much from like other brands, publishers, filmmakers. You do have those like traditional creators, right? There are content creators coming to Kickstarter and launching their first product business, which is that next tier in like your whole content ecosystem, which I'm loving. Just keep seeing that. But I definitely think one of the key things that's like really shifted my mindset when it comes to marketing to creators, speaking to creators, like understanding their pain points, particularly at Kickstarter, is that funding element. Creators need that funding to launch that big idea. So if you want to launch a book, if you want to launch your first short film or your docuseries, a web series, whatever that is, creators are coming to Kickstarter. And just within conversation with them, I'm learning like the pain points or how retaining their creative independence and their IP is so valuable to them that if they go somewhere else, they're going to dilute that in some way. So understanding really like these are humans. They're trying to get their ideas off the ground. Sharing your idea with the world is so scary, which I think is something that people just bypass. They just want to amplify creators. But to put yourself out there takes a lot of confidence. To put an idea out there that doesn't have market validation yet, people aren't really bought in just yet, and you are the only believer in it. There's such a narrative there that even being like at the beginning of their story is just impactful for me personally.
That's really interesting. And I think often on the podcast, we talk about brand and how important brand and trust building go together. And it sounds like for Kickstarter specifically, because you're putting your baby out there, even part of who you are, a lot of the work that you and your team will do is how do you instill that level of trust that they trust your brand to make that request for funding or to launch their big vision. So I'm wondering, like, how do you do that? Like, how do you connect with that audience that has a very high trust standard?
Yeah. And I think that's something I also just talk about as a creator. Like, people trust people first, and they trust brands and companies. So because brands cannot be viewed as trust us, we have to be very real about that. So we want to put as many people, real humans, in front of you as possible. So it's not just I'm going to launch a comic book on Kickstarter. We host webinars where you can actually hear from the head of comics about tips, about strategies. When we do a product launch, we want to have kind of the people making the product speak about it. Even on social, if you scroll, like you'll see our feed is nothing but creators launching things. So it's not this kind of just big brand in the background as just a platform. I definitely want to put creators, like they are the ones who are cool, not us. And that's the ethos I learned two companies back, where so many times B2B brands or even B2C brands would just get so in the weeds of things or in these team meetings about talking about ourselves. The analogy I love using today is Nikon doesn't talk about their shutter speeds and, oh, look at this aperture. No one really understands what that means. But look what people do with this camera. That's what makes it cool. So we put the platform in the creator's hands. They're the ones making the platform amazing. We just facilitate. We're not that cool. You all who are making these brilliant ideas are the ones that deserve the spotlight. So really trying to push creators front and forward, even just showcase them more than ourselves.
So let me ask you something, because I feel like this is a term that we're hearing a lot right now, and I think it's going to be central to our conversation. The creator mindset. Everyone is talking about the creator mindset, how you duplicate it, how you replicate it. What does that mean to you, Brandon? What is the creator mindset?
That's a great question. I think we dived in. I want to take a step back.
That's like foundational, right? It's one of these terms that's being thrown around now, and it's like in vogue to have the creator mindset. But you work with creators.
Yeah, I think creators see value versus promotion first. Like a lot of times creators will start for the goal of just filling a gap. They just want to be helping someone. Or they just want to put out fun content. Over time, they may monetize their content business. They may grow it into a community, etc. But when they are just starting, it's just for the purpose of value. And as we know, like brands, we're tied to value somewhat, but we're more so tied to KPIs. So a lot of times brands will do things from the motive of, it will this drive X KPI? And not saying that's a bad mindset, but when you think like a creator, you're thinking, okay, how can we lead with value first? How can we be less promotional? How can we lead with storytelling? How can we lead with fostering a community? I definitely think the brands doing it right are the ones being like, all right, let's be mission-driven. Let's be value-driven. Let's even adopt some of these creator habits. So instead of putting out a normal video, I'm seeing brands now vlogging as like their style of showing you behind the scenes and making you feel like you're part of their community. Or there's brands doing some unique formats that are just replicating how creators do their hooks, how creators do the video editing, how creators are just speaking to their community. What I tell my social team is when people are scrolling on the Instagram feed or the TikTok feed, right? I don't want them to scroll and be like, oh, this is a brand. I want our content to flow so seamlessly within that feed that you think it's a creator. Because again, most of that feed will be creator-led content. We don't want to be that one brand that's so distinguished. Oh, this is so hashtag ad. It just doesn't fit. So we just want to tone down pushing our brand so heavily. I think even brands putting their logo everywhere, like on organic social, take that off.
One of the things that I think about when I think about what works as an ad on whatever platform is right for your audience is that I think about it. I mean, an ad is an interruption. Like you're there for content. And I need to do something that is going to interrupt whatever algorithm flow you've got going on, but I need to make it feel less like an interruption, but more like entertainment that will be memorable. Mm-hmm. So it needs to fit into your experience, but stand out enough that I'll be like, oh, Kickstarter, or oh, Wix Studio, something like that. But this is very hard to do, right? I think it's easy to say, but one of the things that I think is very challenging as a leader in a marketing team is, how do you get your team, and Brandon, I'm going to ask you your secret sauce. How do you explain to your team this concept of getting into the creator mindset to the point where they're really living it and know when they're reaching it? I do believe we can measure many things, but there are some things when it comes to like taste and, you know, what your brand standards are that are first and foremost subjective. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you get feedback from your audience, et cetera. Do you have a methodology for getting this executed in your team?
Yeah. My main thing, and we just went through this exercise, like we're in the midst of creating a trend report. It's like very brand, but in order to like put it out into the eco world, we're trying to make these social first, like video scripts and lead with this knowledge, but at the same time have a CTA at the end. So again, how do I fit this very brand initiative into like this creator world? So the immediate thing that we're doing is like, all right, all these hooks sound too brand led. But we need to make it feel like it's a creator. Even when we're briefing it to the video editor, we need to make sure we're looking at what creators in our niche are leading with, like edutainment, right? This educational content that still entertains you, but still retains you. I think a lot of brands see so much drop off because then they get like boring brand kind of narrative and we need to have our storytelling and there's too many cooks in the kitchen. So I like to make sure, hey, we need to keep everything very short form, everything very value led, and then have our brand message at the end, but still drives creators. I think one thing creators are doing a lot now that brands are starting to take is also using community messaging to like push it forward. So saying my link in bio is also like an interruption. But if you tell someone to comment, that's a very platform native thing. That's very just like normal. So I think there's a website called ManyChats, which I'm pretty sure many people are familiar with. So I can have a trigger word and then with that trigger word, DM you. So one thing we've even tested is, okay, we need to make sure our CTA is native within this organic social world. So instead of telling people to go to our link in bio, which can be this offset when they're just scrolling on the feed, tell them to comment and we'll send them said link, right? We'll do all the heavy lifting. You just have to comment. And it's a great tool that we're using right now because not only does the algorithm see it as this post is getting a ton of comments, let's share it to more people. So it boosts our visibility, boosts our video views, impressions, et cetera. But at the same time, we're still accomplishing that brand goal because we're making sure that we're sending the report, the link, whatever it is to millions of people. They will now click it, go to our landing page, but we're not doing it in a way that kind of interrupts their social time.
That's really interesting also because you're getting signals of very high intent when someone comments, send me a landing page. Yeah. That's like, I really want to see the thing that you've created, which is really nice.
Thank you. I'll be sure to send it.
I'm going to find this post and comment now.
Brandon, how do you see that line when we're talking about brands taking on that creator mindset, the line between imitation, imitating tactics, and providing real value?
That's a good one. I think the way to truly adopt it is to not do a test for a campaign and not do something just for a moment, because that's when people, when you're not consistent with something and you're only being social first this one time, or you're not memorable. One thing creators do really well is they do series and they just commit. It will be like part 97 of this, right? They hit you so much for that consistency. It's the mother of all learning. So after that repetition, you now think of that creator with said series. I definitely think brands need to adopt, okay, we need to like pitch this to leadership, that way they're bought in at the top. We're going to do X and we're going to do it consistently throughout the year. We need to build up repetition. And through that, we're going to drive our consumers to whatever you're trying to solve. But another way to do it that I think brands aren't really thinking about is characters. I know this sounds weird, and I didn't want to bring up Duolingo because everyone brings up Duolingo, right? But one thing that they sparked for a lot of brands was putting a character in their storytelling. If I look at some of the brands today that I love, there's a clothing brand called Represent, and they recently just rebranded everything. But one of the key kind of characters they have is the founders have now been like content creators themselves. The founders vlog, they're doing run clubs by themselves, but like wearing their clothing brand at the same time. And basically they have these characters embodying the brand and showcasing that brand aura, and people relate to people. So because of that, and they led with this creator ecosystem, that's now pushing the brand forward and they've grown 5X. But it's because they have these distinguishable characters. So I definitely think as brands are thinking of what is the social world we're creating? What are the characters in our story? Is there a product person? Is there someone who always wants to just, I don't know, do street interviews? Like someone who's a character in your social world, who your audience can resonate with. At the same time, they're the ones leading that creator charge. Because I think it's a great point to say, you can't just adopt creator-like tactics and think we're going to be a creator. You have to actually lean into being a creator.
I love your point about the series and the repetition, because you said it so well, but it's a really hard thing for brands to do, because in that ramp up, you don't necessarily have a measurable result.
Fair.
And so you have to be comfortable with that. There's that entrepreneurial spirit that creators, I think, have. That's a part of it. And you alluded to that as well before. So you have to be comfortable with not having the feedback the first time you put it out and the second time you put it out. And the third and the 10th. And that's a tougher thing to do as a brand. It's a harder thing to get leadership buy-in for.
Which I also just like want to take a second to acknowledge, like 100%. And it's just about messaging. Hey, we're taking a different tactic and we're all in this season of unlearning. And I think we're just unlearning the old way of doing social media, the old way of doing content marketing. Content marketing, like 1.0 used to be like, all right, blogs, reports, white papers, we post whatever graphic or flyer we did on this surface on social. Now social demands such a unique perspective and bespoke content. Everything needs to be viewed as we want to take the essence of this and put it within the social world.
Paula loves white papers. She'll tell you all about it.
I feel like white papers are just such a legacy piece of content, and I cannot imagine, and I hope someone writes to me and says, no, they work for me, but I cannot imagine a scenario where any of our, like our audience, where you're talking about Wix, which is more of that creator audience, or Wix Studio, which is more agencies and in-house marketing teams. I can't imagine any of those groups of people being like, oh yeah, I really need to read 10,000 words on this. And I'm going to stop my, whatever I'm doing on LinkedIn or whatever I'm doing on Instagram to read this document that yeah. you also probably gated mm-hmm. for my convenience.
For sure, for sure.
You've required me to put my phone number.
Definitely for your convenience.
I do not want to do any of those things. And I think now it's such an interesting time to work in content and on social, which are the same things, right? Because the standard is so high. And that doesn't mean everyone meets the standard, right? I think that's what we're getting at. But the standard is so high that it's forcing like real creativity and less copycatting. I think that's that these tactics of the past, like white papers that maybe at some point used to work at an in-person conference or whatever, now really don't. And what I, one of the things that I really like about working in a marketing team is really pushing the boundaries of what will enable us to connect with our audience, and content is a big way of doing that. So I'm always asking myself, is what I'm doing in this particular activation memorable and meaningful, mm-hmm. right? Bringing value, but also at a certain point, webinars were new and now they're not. So how do you make them feel still fresh and new and not, depending on what content you have on there, maybe a traditional webinar is the right thing.
Yeah.
But if you are not able to do that, you need to entertain, you need to bring yeah. something else. And I think that that's what, one of the things that I think makes marketing really interesting right now.
I don't want to go off on a tangent, but I love where this is going because this is so much my world. So as head of content at Kickstarter, I oversee social, but I also oversee our blog, SEO, like landing pages, all that stuff. And what you said, Paul, like really resonates, because even in the world of like editorials and blogs, I've seen this year, like it's so hard to do the traditional blog route, right? AI has so much AI written content. And now even Google has AI summaries. So when people search things, Google just summarized it. Oh, got my answer. So no one's really clicking landing pages anymore. So that traditional metric of this blog got X amount of views and this landing page got X amount of views is starting to become less of a primary metric because people aren't really clicking. They could be getting that information from my blog content, but Google just summarized the answer they need up top. It's a fast-paced world. They're going to keep moving.
It's like reading a headline.
Did you see the HubSpot graph?
I did not.
Oh, I need to send it to you. It was very much on LinkedIn about 4 days ago.
Okay.
The organic traffic of HubSpot's blog for the last, whatever, 15 years. And since AI launched, it's like sharp downturn. And I think it was just out with a comment, look at how AI is changing SEO, basically. And it's true. And it might not mean, which is I think what you're saying, it doesn't mean necessarily that their blog doesn't bring HubSpot value, because I think it's probably still feeding LLMs with the right information about their brand and the things they're thought leaders for. But that tactic of creating content, especially very top of funnel content, so that people come to see you as the authority on XYZ, and then therefore happen to be on your blog, and then therefore happen to convert as a user, that's probably doesn't have a very long-term future in that current form. And anyone who's working in growth marketing of any kind right now needs to be thinking about, what is my GEO strategy? How much does it overlap with the SEO strategy I had in the past? And how do I make sure I'm still, like, I'm ahead of that new thing that the marketing world, the whatever AI threw at us.
Yeah.
Right? It's no longer just Google algorithm changes. It's also this crazy thing, but you have to see it. When I saw it, I didn't understand. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. No, I look at the metrics on my side, I totally believe it. Because this year we've grown, I think we had 600,000 blog page visits, which is 20% growth year over year. Because before I came on, there was the blog was just existing, but it wasn't doing anything. Did a whole SEO refresh, all that stuff. But to your point, yeah, ever since AI, it has been like literally a sharp decline. But you even mentioned webinars, and it got me thinking of, yeah, these old kind of content marketing models, the goal and the perspective needs to just totally shift. So like this webinar will serve value, be a podcast. It will like, there's so many legs it has, but I now see these things are just content studios. This is what will just power our content. This is 8 different social reels. This is 8 different TikToks. YouTube Shorts has actually been driving us so much growth more than YouTube main video content. Yeah, there's a couple of YouTube Shorts we have that's literally contributed hundreds of thousands of subscribers in a way that our main video content is not. And just knowing how I see Google and YouTube advancing AI search, I'm like, all right, they're definitely going to start putting vertical videos on the search. We need to start going all in on YouTube Shorts. That way, by the time that ramps up, we're already there.
Yeah, exactly. I think that type of thinking, that's what's going to differentiate the marketers that kind of survive this change versus the ones that are caught catching up. And you never want to be doing that, especially if you're an established brand. You always need to be one step ahead.
Hopefully we're not waiting to see that blog number crashing. Hopefully we're like getting out ahead of these things.
Yes.
But how do you do that? How do you think about seeing what's around the corner and actually being adaptive?
Yeah, just like staying on top of it. For me, it was always just looking at the data constantly, because it would have been really bad if, oh, let me just do my quarterly reporting. And then I saw, like, oh, none of this stuff has been performing. That would have been really bad.
It's not going well. I wonder why.
So I was even very transparent with our CMO as I was seeing it. And at a team kind of all hands, I presented, here is how the Google landing page really works. Where it was like the AI summary, and then it was basically sponsored kind of links. And then organic is down here. And then what other people search is here. Hey, we're here. It really just lays out like how things are working. But one thing I'm just constantly doing is intaking various information. I think even being a LinkedIn creator, I'm seeing so much industry conversation on the daily. So I'm even asking peers, like, what are they seeing in their world? I think one thing as a marketer that I've always been an advocate of is not learning from your industry. When I was in fashion, I didn't look at fashion brands. I was looking at what Shopify was doing and figuring out how I can adapt it to Ralph Lauren. Yeah. I was looking at what beauty brands are doing because they just ramp out stuff all the time and see like how we can adapt that. Even when I came into the tech world, I think tech socials can be like very cut and dry sometimes. And I also came from the standpoint of, all right, how can we editorialize our tech social? When I was at Squarespace, same things. Like you can only talk about building a website so many times. It's like, how can I make it?
I don't know anything about that, Brent.
So I was really thinking, all right, how can we make things more interesting? So even adopting that creator mindset, we started doing ASMR videos. It could seem like very hokey and like social, like, all right, that's going to do anything. I said, let's just do some ASMR videos. Everything from typing to people wanting to build their, like whatever product they're selling, they would like package the product and say, I'm shipping it via Squarespace. And like that kind of gave us more growth because again, you have to just be ahead of the curve. You have to see these trends and react to them very quickly.
I am very curious because you have probably also done it at Squarespace and you definitely do it at Kickstarter, how you collaborate with creators when it comes to creating content, because that's not easy. And for sure, we've had it before where we have amazing creators on Wix. Really, they do beautiful things, products, whatever their art, their passion project, their business. But capturing their story in a way that is both authentic and that connects with your audience, also not very straightforward. How do you take those bits and package it in a way that works?
Yeah. There's one example that immediately comes to mind, and it might be unfair because this creator was a YouTuber.
But that's helpful to know.
Yes, they're a YouTuber, so they definitely know how to craft an engaging video. But they launched their second project on Kickstarter, and on YouTube, they're like a tinkerer, right? Like they come up with inventions, they like tinker with these new ideas and products and like DIY a lot of stuff. But they want to actually launch a physical good on Kickstarter. So they started off with the core problem. We all live in such tiny apartments. Myself in New York, I can resonate with that. Yes, things are very tough to maneuver. And they basically pointed out that I want to hang my clothes on the wall, but the hanger basically is so far out, I can't really hang my clothes in an impactful way. Uh-huh. So she came up with this invention where it's a foldable hanger. So she grabbed the cardigan. So imagine, this is very tactile. As you're talking to the camera, I'm just constantly moving. I want to fold this cardigan, and now it's close on the wall. So basically a foldable hanger. And the crazy invention raised hundreds of thousands on Kickstarter and went viral several times. Because so many people live in such small studios, or maybe like they're in a camper and like they're moving constantly, but they can't have these bulky items sticking so far. They want to consolidate space. So basically she just proved that I can have 50% less space with these hangers if we just fold them and have them like flushed on a wall. That kind of storytelling makes it very helpful, because when we talk to creators, right? What problem are you solving? When you're introducing something, what problem are you solving? So even if it's a creator on Wix Studios and they're, you know, launching their website, I would even start with what problem are they solving? And maybe it starts with like them picking up a camera being like, I'm a wedding photographer, but during lockdown, I had to shift my perspective. And then now we're showing like this whole new narrative, like why they are now using Wix Studios to have like their marketplace of photography. And this was like, we have basically the audience tied in and really just bought into their story. To where by the buy-off point, whenever it's the CTA or you can shop this or whatever it is, they understand why we're presenting what we're presenting. So whenever I work with creators, I really want to get to the heart of what's unique, what value are you providing within your content, but at the same time, what's that thing we can hook our teeth into? There's another creator called Little Chunk. And they, I'm not sure you guys are familiar. The name itself is very interesting.
Please tell us who Little Chunk is.
They wanted to make a water bottle for the dog. And I think this is another kind of tactic when we work with creators, like how can we make it as entertaining as possible? So as the person is talking, their dog is in a backpack, like literally over their shoulder, a corgi. Already you're bought in, like your attention is trying to figure out what is happening on this screen. So we try to just evoke to creators, like being very dynamic. I think the way I phrase it in the past is like visual stimulation. Like, all right, whether there's a sound or you're doing something while you're talking, there's subtitles. Like in the first, I know we used to say first 3 seconds, right? But in the beginning of the video, there's so much happening where I'm going to be bought in. And now you're really listening to my story.
That's very, okay. I don't want to say unfair. But you have very cool users. And I'm thinking Wix has that same luxury because we also have very creative users. But Wix Studio is more of a B2B business model. So we have a lot of agencies, in-house marketing teams. And not that those aren't cool. They're very fun to work in, at least. But you don't have so much the dog. You know what I mean? Like, it's harder. But I'm curious if you've
seen corgis.
Yeah, less corgis, unfortunately. But I'm curious if you have examples from things you've seen more on the B2B side that struck you as maybe cutting edge isn't the right word, but like social forward. Because I'm always very interested in brands who, based on their industry, you would assume are pigeonholed in a more like boring aesthetic, storytelling, whatever it might be. No. And then we found, both Sasha and I, specifically on this podcast, some brands that are doing super crazy, like enterprise software, things you wouldn't think you can go to wild on, and they do, and they find ways. I'm curious, given you're the tastemaker, I want to know if you've seen something that stood out for you in that space.
I have. And I also preface this, I was a part of the campaign. I was like a creative part of the campaign. So it was just very interesting to see. I think that's also an added insight. Like, I'm always seeing what other brands do. But Hootsuite had to publish a trend report. No. And the way they wanted to position it was, okay, we're going to buy these gigantic newspapers and have creators just hold up these gigantic newspapers. And then they're going to have their graphic designer on, you know, once we guys submit these photos, they would just edit the newspaper to have a headline that's unique to each creator. What's an insight in the report that you saw that is in your own words? And then they, I think, partnered with maybe 10 to 20 creators. And all the creators posted at the exact same time on the exact same platform. And the way they do that in like the B2B space is basically you have all these niche, either B2B creators, thought leaders, key opinion leaders, talking about a singular topic at a singular time, and it shuts down the entire platform. So now everything that people are seeing are related to this one thing. So again, repetition. I'm viewing, all right, I just scrolled past 4 newspapers. What is going on? And then you see people reacting to this. And then you see people giving their deep dives of, hey, this brand is doing this. Like, why is everyone doing it? It just creates so much conversation on the platform. So Hootsuite did this. They partnered with all these creators. And then a couple of weeks later, the CEO, I believe, comes out and says, that tactic put $1 million in the pipeline.
I'm like, whoa, nice.
Of brands that wanted to like work with them, signed on, wanted to use their platform because of the insights that these niche creators were sharing. So one of the insights that I saw that I reacted to was around how trend, when brands hop on trends, the trend's officially dead, right? Not a new insight, but we can all be like, yes, that's very accurate.
Yes.
But how can we pose this in the B2B space, something interesting? So the way I just did it was, please stop saying demure. And like leading with, hey, brand, stop saying demure in your email copy and this and this and this and this. Of course, that's an interesting hook. People are going to read more. But every creator did the very similar thing in their own niche to their own audience. Everything from social media managers to social media strategists to social media creators to even just like business leaders. And like that within itself, I think was a great tactic for Hootsuite.
One of the things that I think made it work is that it was many influencers at one time, as opposed to a trickle effect.
Agreed.
And I've heard arguments in favor of both, but I think part of why this kind of overloading your platform with this is because the visuals of the campaign that you're describing, are, you have to look again because it doesn't make sense. And that in and of itself will create the instinct, I think, in the viewer to either scroll back if they pass something, or that repetition is going to create rent-free space in your mind about this brand, right? About Hootsuite. Whereas some more, I don't know, traditional influencer marketing activation that doesn't have a very strong visual anchor, if you have a lot of them on the same day or in the same week, I could see them getting lost in the noise or maybe feeling a bit spammy. I'm wondering what you think about that.
I do agree with that. It's very easy to get spammy very quickly when every creator is just saying the same thing. So there needs to be some level of visual cohesion. Completely agree. I definitely think in the B2B space, I think the same way we're challenging brands like step aside content marketing 1.0 and like, all right, white papers, they used to work, but not really anymore. I would encourage even the B2B side of the businesses, stop thinking B2B has to be so cut and dry and you can't be creative within the B2B space. Unhinged marketing is a tactic we see all the time in the B2C space. B2B marketers who like toe the line of maybe unhinged marketing, I think see some level of impact because it's just so unique. So yes, Hootsuite had all creators post at the same time, but holding a gigantic newspaper, and it wasn't just in your house, it was like on the street. Like, it's weird, right?
It's weird. You stop and you look, what is this?
But I do think when brands are doing it versus a trickle-down effect of just influencers posting when it's best for them, you do need to have some level of visual cohesion where the influencers posting at the same time makes the greater impact. At the same time, thinking of what thing just works universally. Like a newspaper, people holding up a newspaper, that's going to work. So if we're going to partner with a group of influencers and we don't want it to feel spammy, it can't just be talking head videos because people are just probably going to scroll past them and that's just normal. Yeah. What thing can we have all the influencers doing where it creates press buzz, it creates conversation on the platform, it creates commentary, it creates people wanting to learn more, et cetera.
So one question is like this question of cohesion and not feeling spammy. And another question is around like the authenticity of that creator's, the authenticity of that creator and like to their audience. And I think there's always this tension of what the brand wants and the brand representing itself and who that creator is and what their online presence is and what their relationship looks like with their audience. Mm-hmm. And that brand, not just using that creator to access that audience. It can be so tempting to just say Brandon has access to this many tens of thousands of people on LinkedIn. We want to get to those people. But what does it look like for a brand to actually work with a creator in a way that is authentic to the brand, to the creator themselves and that creator's audience?
Yeah, great question. I would first put the onus on the creators. Don't take partnerships for brands just for it, because then once you lose your reputation or that trust, you don't get it back. For brands, I would say you have to get comfortable with creators having their own style of voice. So even within a brand marketing space, I'm very familiar on here's a brief, here's a tone of voice, here are the messaging points, here's this. Creators need to say it in their voice. Because if it sounds like I'm reading a script from a brand, it's not going to resonate. So I definitely want brands and brand marketers to be comfortable with, okay, here's what the essence of the campaign we want to encapsulate We need to be comfortable with creators saying it in a way where their audience is going to buy in, or their audience is going to resonate with said campaign. The way Hootsuite did it for this campaign was, like, yes, they just wanted to push the report, but they gave the creators the onus to choose whatever insight they wanted to, phrase it in their own tone of voice, and then they're being comfortable with that. I think even as a creator, you being upfront, not only FTC guidelines, but you want to make sure, hey, this is the promotional ad, but we all had, like, this is an ad in a very funny, like, interesting way. Yes, it's an ad, but it's not a lie. Or, like, you know, doing something where people are promoting, yes, this is sponsored, but you're not going to want to miss this gem here. Just doing something where you're acknowledging it to your community, because also your community knows creators nowadays do monetize their brands. Every YouTuber is going to have an affiliate link. So it's not a unnatural practice, but you just want to be forthcoming about it.
That authenticity again.
With your creators on Kickstarter, what is the leading edge of what's happening there? And what are you seeing that is just the most interesting thing that your creators are doing on Kickstarter?
So I'm going to answer that by, like, maybe a longer story. So the reason I came to Kickstarter was because I had really started resonating with helping creators launch whatever they wanted to launch. At Squarespace, I had so many friends in photography, friends who, like, had their portfolio and, like, they wanted to, like, promote their services better. So, like, all right, there's so many creators looking for work, especially when, like, lockdown hit. So, like, how do they build their online presence? At Songfinch, it was the same thing for music creators. The music industry right now is suffering. You only make money through merch and tours. But, like, music itself has, like, died in its essence. So how can I help? I had heard the CEO of Kickstarter, Everett Taylor, speak. And the first thing that, like, perked up my ears was knowing that brands like Peloton, Oura Ring, Allbirds, Brooklinen, they all started on Kickstarter. They had a Kickstarter campaign, and now they became this viral sensation of business. That was, to me, one data point. I was like, that's a unnatural or, like, untraditional method to success I have never thought about. I then just keep looking at Kickstarter. Eventually, the opportunity presents itself, join the team. And I then see so many various niches of creators who are trying to launch whatever said business they are. So I do think that unique thing of Kickstarter is, I've heard a lot of brands talk about early adopters. I think, and I know I'm biased by saying this, I think Kickstarter really is a hub for early adopters.
I don't think you're biased. I think that's 100% true. The whole concept is you get in on the ground.
It's the thing, yes. Yeah. And that just fascinated me because I'm now seeing not only buying behavior, I'm seeing various trends. I'm seeing how people are looking at everything from the film industry and when the strike happens, how that impacted what people are doing on Kickstarter. And when things are happening within the publishing world, how that impacts people on Kickstarter. So just knowing that itself is just so fascinating to me on a daily basis. Just going one step further, once I'm now noticing whether these are trends that people are doing, you now can advise creators on, like, all right, this is the next wave of maybe creator monetization. There's so many photographers, but a lot of photographers struggle with monetizing their content business, let's call it. I'm noticing on Kickstarter, a lot of photographers are creating art books. Yes, I'm a photographer, but one thing that's universal is home decor. And people love having coffee table books. So now there's photographers on Kickstarter who are crowdfunding a photo book of a beautiful imagery that's laid out in, like, a coffee table style book where they now have a consumer product. That's a very great and tangible insight to share with photographers. Hey, you want to launch your business, or, like, you want to maybe grow your business, do it X way. You can crowdfund it where you don't have to take any money from your pockets. You have a good number about demand. And you're able to, like, go into production feeling very confident. Doing the same with even filmmakers. When the strike hit, we're seeing people do a lot of short films. Less work, less overhead. I shouldn't say less work, but, like, less overhead, less scripting. You can, like, turn around a little bit faster. Short films. That's very interesting. We're going to start seeing that within the world itself. In the publishing world, creators started going back to older IPs and republishing them. So one creator got an IP from Disney and then published a comic book about Darkwing Duck, the Gargoyles, like, old nostalgic things that kind of have these niche communities tied to them, but no one's speaking to them. That within itself is just always, like, why I came to Kickstarter, why it's so fascinating to me, even how I'm seeing creators on the platform interact with things, because all these various learnings continue to just be data points of how creators can monetize, how they can grow their business, if they want to start the business where it can expand to, et cetera.
It's mind-blowing to me how many niche creator segments you probably work with on a day-to-day basis. And just, and like how interesting they are.
Very interesting. You know? Very
like,
interesting.
There's like a niche segment of like people who are creating accessories for dogs, or I don't know, you can tell us more. Like,
yeah.
Romance novels and like
exactly
solutions. And it's wild.
Yeah. And just knowing that, I think it also encourages creators like, hey, there's always the nicher you go, right? Actually, the more people you're probably going to resonate with. There are people who make, of course, you have like the romance novels and then you have X category of novels. I think in the film world is so interesting where like these subgenres of like, all right, we're going to do like a zombie movie, but it's like a romance thing. Or, hey, I'm making this horror film, but it's also a comedy. And they're like mixing so many subgenres together. Like you've probably like never heard of it. I'm like, all right, this is the animated short that's both like a mid-century love story, but it's also this. Like, these unique things that are just so abstract resonate with such a group of people that they get funded. We have, I think, two films at Sundance right now that got funded on Kickstarter. But again, they're speaking to such a niche community. They just grow into these viral sensations.
That's just good product marketing. You're talking about positioning in a way that your audience understands what it is that your product is. And not enough larger brands do that sometimes. It's amazing.
What is it that brands can learn about these niche segments and how to speak to different audiences that it's just not obvious to brands, but creators do it really well.
I think brands want to reach the masses. And by reaching the masses, you end up talking to no one 80% of the time because you go so general and so broad with all your messaging. And we think we're going to be exclusionary if we have a niche, or we think we're going to exclude a potential customer or client if we exclude the masses. Rethink that strategy, because when we niche down our messaging and we talk specifically to one person, that message resonates a lot deeper. And I think if I was to like quantify, that's the real qualified lead you want versus an unqualified lead. So I think if we niche down our messaging so specific in a way where we're going to hit not only this community, this community has been like seeking validation. They've been seeking someone speaking to them. That's where you reach the pinnacle.
Transitioning a little bit. We've learned a lot from you. This has been such an interesting conversation. A lot to digest here. I'm especially interested to hear from you as a creator of content, as a very creative person yourself. We like to ask our guests where you draw your inspiration. And so if you can share with us someone to follow, something to read, you can reiterate something we talked about before. Yeah, and something that you're listening to.
Yeah. Someone to follow. He's an entrepreneur, but I take his entrepreneurial tips and actually apply them to brand marketing. His name is Matt Gray with an A. He has a company called Founder OS. And his goal is to just help founders reach $1 million. He has a newsletter. I believe he's working on a book, but he publishes YouTube videos, etc. But some things he's teaching there, I've been able to apply, where you take one piece of content and you turn it to 26 pieces of content. I've applied that to our brand marketing just to see it grow. I think a lot of people can learn even from a business side of efficiency and time. And I'm very much like, no more meetings because this is just messing up our flow. Let's hammer down and work where you get more kind of bang for your buck in terms of your time. So I think Matt Gray is a great person to follow. In terms of reading, I saw a gentleman named Dr. Marcus Collins at a conference, and his speech blew me away. He now has a book, I believe it's called For the Culture, but he talked about how he used to work for an artist called Beyonce, and he was part of creating her community. And at the time, the movie Entourage was so cool, so they called it the Beyonterage. And that's what they were trying to kind of basically create community around. It flopped totally. In hindsight, we get it. But they saw the internet and they're like, all right, why is this not working? And then they saw everyone calling themselves the Beehive. And then they said, okay, let's not create something that new. Let's just adopt what our community is doing. And then they went towards the Beehive. You see what that is today. That was such a great insight about all brands want to go out their community, but I think they need to have a meeting and figure out what community is. Listen to your community and go that way. In terms of listen to, there's a podcast I love called Sweat Equity. It's a new podcast, but they basically just break down marketing playbooks. Here's what, if you want to do content marketing 2025, social media playbooks, here's how, I think what resonates with this kind of conversation, a creator mindset for a brand, looking at B2C playbooks, et cetera. I think they just break it down in such a great way. That's a great podcast. And then something upcoming, but slight plug, I'm launching my newsletter.
Oh, nice. We love to do that.
I'm launching a newsletter because I do all these LinkedIn posts, and I think I only touch a fraction of what I want to touch upon. So it's called Content to Commas. By the time this comes out, it will probably be out. But it's to help creators build personal brands. It's to help brand marketers monetize their content in a way that's impactful and achieve scalable growth.
Amazing. We'll link it in the show notes.
Thank you.
Brandon, thanks for sharing all of that. This is it for this episode of Funnel Vision. You can find us on all of the major podcast platforms, and we'll be posting the full interview on YouTube under the Wix Studio page. Be sure to hit subscribe to stay up to date on our latest episode. You can also find more great resources for marketers at our Content Hub linked below or in the show notes. Thank you, everyone, and see you next time on Funnel Vision.